folks. Get Out the Room is back. Get Out the Room, episode 96. That's right. 10 days in between tapings. So, I don't really know what this means, but I think the march to 100 just got a little bit easier.
Year of 100, baby.
That is it. I am your host, Jay. Welcome to Get Out the Room. You are horror, pop culture, and whatever the hell we feel like talking about. As always, I got my people with me. Scott, what's going on?
Not much. Relaxed and ready to talk again.
Relaxed.
All right. Am relaxed. I am.
Does that come with any libation, or it's just a natural feeling and state that you're in?
No. I currently do not have any libation. I just have a glass of water. We'll see how I'm not down for the night though, so we'll see how this goes, and then I'll determine my drink of choice from there.
Okay. All right. And the greatest American villain after last episode.
There you go.
Full on villain. Tom, what's going on, brother?
Still stepping to the bad side.
You're not stepping, motherfucker. You there? So.
I'm running. I'm in that joint. I'm doing the Dougie in the bad side.
You doing the Dougie in the bad side?
That's right.
That is a really, really strange visual. So.
that's what'll be on tonight. Yo, folks, buckle up. Buckle up.
Yeah.
Be a good one.
Yeah. Gonna be some lively conversation happening out here, kids. You can find Get Out the Room anywhere good podcasts are found. You can find us Stitcher Radio, iTunes, Podomatic, Wicked Radio Network, Listenopoly, everywhere except Google. So
Facebook. Don't forget.
Oh yeah, the Facebook fan page, which we have been a lot more into recently, which I think is great. I think we'll still have to keep working, but I think it's been good. So
absolutely,
check us out there. Tone's been boosting some posts.
Yeah, the people need to hear this. Yeah. We do it for y'all. We do it for y'all.
Appreciate that. Well, fuck it, man. Let's jump right into it. The news of the day. In what has become a rallying cry and a super big win for men's rights supporters, Chris Hardwick has been...
Don't frame it like that.
...immediately reinstated to AMC. And will be hosting The Talking Dead immediately. And he might even get his other show, Talking, back. So
More than likely.
So after the allegations from his ex-girlfriend, AMC says that they conducted a thorough investigation and are incredibly comfortable with reinstating him immediately and getting him back to work. So here we are.
Everybody, that's corporate talk for we think that girl lying.
Right.
Yep. Which is problematic and uncomfortable and... What was the adjective I used? Complicated. Yes,
It is complicated.
Right. Given my man Chris's response, like his very clipped response, that tells me two things. That tells me one, more than a few of the things that she said were accurate and true and right. Two, he's either learned from it, was smart enough to not lie about it, or has grown from it. So he just issued the very clipped, that very clipped response. That makes me uncomfortable because even if half the stuff she said was true, like not even the real, real bad stuff, just half the stuff she said, like he's got a problem. But in researching for the show, like I realized he's struggled with alcoholism, and that can bring out the worst in a person. And this could perhaps have been something that came during that time in his life. And so, questionable decisions are kind of a thing. And
Or he could have just been an insecure nerd who got more popularity than his little fragile ego could fucking handle.
Right, and it might have took him some time.
No, I don't even think it was that. I think he finally found a woman who was above him in status, and he couldn't do none of that shit. He married a goddamn Hearst. That's old world money. That's bedrock money. That ain't even like, you know, like we talking like Steele, J.P. Morgan, Hearst. That's the type of shit we talking about. He married one of them. Yeah, she ain't coming with no. She ain't coming with no goddamn rules. I've been at a Hearst Castle too. I took two tours. I've been out. My wife and I did it too.
It's beautiful and it's fucking amazing. And given when it was built, like as beautiful as it is, and all that land, you're like, damn.
Right.
These motherfuckers had money.
These motherfuckers had elevators in the 1800s. Get the fuck out of here, man. In the house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, some real sci-fi shit.
You know, like, you sit up here trying to, like, psychoanalyze that shit. And truth be told, let me not speak flippantly about addiction and if somebody does have a particular issue. Trust me, I've been around a lot of it. I've seen it. I get it. But I don't know how I feel about this particular situation. You know, the other aspect is it's not against the law to be trash. And
no, it's not.
And should you lose your show for being trash? I don't know. I think that's what this conversation is about.
Right, right. And then, look, fine. I'm problematic, Bay. I'm gonna say it. Like the way that this, I already knew you just be setting me up. That's okay. You know the way that we came about this. You know. The way that she did this, all but named him. Like, all but named him. We all knew exactly who she was talking about. That's a kind of signaling that is problematic in its own right. And, you know, there is such a thing as abused wife syndrome, where someone will, you know, after years or months or whatever being abused, they will lash out and do something like rash or fucked up or rude or whatnot. And that's not to be discounted because it's a real fucking thing. I've seen it. I've been around it. It's real. But all of this to me, and this is exactly what I said to Damon, all of this, when you add all this together, to me, it screams complicated. I think we had two broken people who came together and had a broken fucking mess, you know, and here we are. But I will say this. I firmly believe that Chris Hardwick probably did hinder her career. I believe that.
I believe that shit too.
I believe that he did, like, pretty much sequester her during Comic Cons, which is fucked up in 138 different fucking ways. I believe that he did have this ridiculous rule of you got to be sexually available to me at all moments. I believe that. So like whatever else happened, those three things alone tells me like he's trash, or at least he was trash. I hope to God he got therapy and he's, you know, at least average right now. But look, that tells me he's trash.
Let's call it what it is. He did some of that shit. We don't know what he did. We're never going to know exactly what happened. That's just the way it is. AMC hired him back because they want the ratings. People like Chris Hardwick. Yeah. They like having him there. That's why they brought him back. Chris
Hardwick Army
has a face. It's their top show still. Yeah. Hell, Talking Dead is one of their top shows. I mean, he's basically a cast member on that show. I mean, for all intents and purposes, he's another member of the Walking Dead cast, sort of.
Well, he's just as recognizable as them.
Right. And you know
absolutely.
What? If Andrew Lincoln and Lauren Cohen are leaving the show, they have to make these strides to try and keep fans on board. And one of the ways to do it is to bring Chris Hardwick back, despite whatever the hell he did. Look, he did some of that shit. I mean, you know, it's pretty obvious that something happened, but you know, we're never going to get down to the nitty gritty, and it's going to be how are fans going to react? Are they even going to react? Will viewership go down because of Chris Hardwick.
There's been a huge reaction already. There's been a huge reaction. The fans are pumped. You gotta remember, like, I mean, some of these fans are probably some of our fans. So, like, hey, if I offend y'all, I'm sorry, but like, they got a lot of neckbeards.
Some of y'all fucking trash.
You know, it is what it is. It is what it is. You know, so they're very excited. But Scott, I think Scott nailed it 100%. Like, they took a look at the situation. I believe they did investigate it. They took a look at it, and then they were like, okay, probably 98% of this shit is true. But he didn't do nothing illegal, and he didn't do nothing that we can get sued for.
Yep.
So we're gonna bring him back, and that's where we're at right now.
And you know what? This type of situation right here could open the door for Disney to do the same thing with James Gunn.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know comparable Damon situations.
Damon and I talked about this a little bit because I took your opinion, Scott, that like, hey, you know, this could be a good thing. This could be a thing for studios to like start doing. Like, you get these accusations instead of sweeping them underneath the rug or burying them or trying to hide them or ignoring them. You say, yo, homie, you locked out the house for a little bit. Give me them keys. You hire your PI. You know, Elmore Leonard takes a look at it. He goes through it, finds out it's good or it's bad. If it's bad, you're keeping them keys, homie, you locked out. If it's good, we give you keys back.
I don't like that.
Damon don't agree with that.
Because I feel like there's a fucking value proposition to every one of those situations where you figure out how profitable are you, how important are you to moving forward with what we have going on. And, you know, in an industry that is run, influenced, done everything by straight white males, you know, if there's ever a fucking system that forces that particular industry to look at other people to tell those stories other than straight white males, I'm for that shit. You know, and they're like, well, what about men's rights? What about the fake accusers? I ain't worried about all that.
No.
I'm not particularly worried about that.
Well, but I mean, wait, just because they got just in that, I mean, it doesn't mean that the next, like the Guardians 3 director is going to be a woman or a black guy.
No, that's absolutely true. But at some point, I noticed immediately, as soon as Chris Hardwick shit went away, Aisha Tyler's show just got put up in profile. So there's a direct cause and effect for that.
And it's not like she's not deserving. Like, Aisha Tyler is about that work.
Putting in work for a long time.
Right. Well, to that, I will say this. Like, the idea of, you know, false accusations of violence against women is what we call a vanishing impossibility. Like, it happens so infrequently that we might as well just say it doesn't happen at all. That being said, we live in an infinite universe. Yes, everybody, we live in the new 52. Our universe is infinite. And in this infinite universe, things do happen. And
you are doing some real nerd speak right now. Goddamn.
Hey, that's what we do.
I support it.
And in this infinite universe, those things.
Although, by the way, just to interject, calling us the new 52 is kind of accurate because the new 52 is kind of crappy, and the universe we're currently living in right now, is kind of crappy. It's just a nice little parallel.
We're in the middle.
This cannot be Earth Prime. Not with what we're doing with. Like, we Earth 9 or 5 or some shit
like
that.
It's 6814.
Yeah. But that being said, like, unfortunately, these things do happen. There are false accusations. People do say that things happen to them that don't really happen to them. And I'm saying this from experience. And even if that's true, I would rather live in a universe where every false accuser is believed, regardless of what happens to the accused.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that the ideas, the false accusations, they definitely should be believed. if we find out that what happened is baseless, and there also has to be, you know, a situational awareness to this, like, to all of this shit. James Gunn making some bad jokes on Twitter is not at all the same as somebody being a trash human being in a relationship. But we've equated them as such. And people, folks are aligning what James Gunn did, what Roseanne did. Like, no, she has a history of being problematic. She had fucking SS Nazi regalia on as, like, leading up to her damn show. Like, that's fucking dumb. That is fucking dumb. She also
has a history of mental illness, though. Like, if we're going to play in the gray, like, she has a history of mental illness.
Nah, so
she's
player.
Still dealing with that.
No,
I'm just playing devil's advocate. I'm not saying that it's right, because I don't believe it's right either. I believe, like my personal opinion is, like, look, we got you on record for all this shit. For all these years, you done took one step too many. You got to go, period. I don't care about if you thought the woman was white, because that's what she keeps saying. I thought the woman was white. I don't know how.
I don't give a shit about that.
Clearly a black woman.
I don't give a shit about that. If you gonna go flying off in the handle of that shit, or you know that, you know, these are the things that happen when you're not on your meds, like, you got the keep the racism in the house meds and shit, then motherfucker, you should have had them shits on you at all time when the finger's on Twitter.
Because, or at the very least, have somebody else manage a Twitter account.
Exactly. But you shouldn't have, like, if you have fucking narcotics to hide your racism, guess what, motherfucker? You racist. Get the fuck out of here.
Well, there you have it, folks. I can't fight the logic. There you go. I tried to play the devil's advocate, and motherfucking God won. So we good.
Like, she is just one of those kind of extreme. That's not a gray situation. That's a really clear black and white situation. And for the most part, even with James Gunn shit, with the shit he said is pretty black and white. It's tasteless than a motherfucker.
You and know? Unfunny.
Yeah, and unfunny. And Scott, you had a point about comedy. Go ahead and expound on it.
Well, you know, what I'm afraid with all this stuff, these, you know, I say knee-jerk reactions. Look, the Roseanne shit is, that's not a knee-jerk reaction, because, you know, we don't need that hate speak around. And her making all these excuses afterwards kind of follows her fucking leader. And it's just stupid. It's just ignorant. It's dumb. And James Gunn, notice what he did. Notice how he came out right away. And yeah, I did that shit. Yeah, I support what Disney did. I did that shit. It's okay. But I'm afraid of that if we keep, you know, back to the Chris Hardwick thing, you know, we don't know what happened there. And he got punished before really anything, they were able to go look at anything. Now, yeah, he got his show back and whatnot. Comedians actually get, you know, we live in a world where a lot of what they say, they can be demonized for now. I mean, a lot of guys or a lot of things that used to be okay to be said, you say them now, and you can be demonized for them in 2018. And look, some of it makes sense, but, you know, jokes are jokes. I mean, I think there's a time and a place, of course, but if you go to a comedy show, and you know what kind of comedian you're going to, I think you know kind of what you're getting into. But even today, some of that, these guys can get roasted. They get roasted alive. Now, we give passes to certain people. I mean, you know, I love Dave Chappelle, and he was making some really risque jokes that for the time.
They were poor. I mean, the gay jokes were poor. And I imagine he wrote them shits a couple years ago.
Oh, absolutely. And
by the time they actually made it to air, I bet he looking at that shit right now like, that's a poor choice.
Nobody roasted Dave Chappelle because it's Dave Chappelle, and we're happy to see Dave Chappelle again.
No, that's not
Twitter,
true.
No, Black Twitter got his ass.
Yeah, they took him to motherfucking task. Like a lot of people, they took him to task.
That's good.
But here's the issue. Like the part that you're saying, motherfuckers liked him so much, they were willing to overlook that shit.
Correct.
That's the goddamn problem. That right there. Poor behavior is excused because we like them. We like to see ourselves in their
popularity contest.
Yeah, but we also like to see ourselves in their situation. A lot of these men's rights views.
This is why I do believe Disney's going to rehire James Gunn. He's too popular. He's making Guardians is a thing because of this dude. Let's be realistic here, and they're one of the big franchises that the MCU can push now. Now, look, they're in a unique position now with getting Fox and being able to push maybe the X-Men and Fantastic Four, because let's also be realistic. If Marvel had those characters from the start, we'd never have Guardians movies. You know what I mean? We would never have Guardians movies. We'd never have.
Well, we wouldn't have the MCU as we have it, though. Like they wouldn't started.
We would, but I don't think it would be.
It wouldn't be the way it is.
It would be Spider-Man, Wolverine would be. They'd be the guys.
They were forced to get creative because they didn't have their tentpoles that they really wanted.
Correct. Correct.
Like they had to start with Tony Stark, and then they had to go and make Captain America more accessible, more fun, because they didn't have Wolverine, because they didn't have the X-Men, because they didn't have the Fantastic Four, they didn't have the Thing. They had to do a whole bunch of other shit to get there.
Right. And I really do think that we're going to, one of the stories coming up here soon, because, one of the pre-production movies is going to be Guardians 3 here come, next year, the beginning of next year. They're going to be talking about it. I fully expect James Gunn's name to be brought back. I fully expect that.
For just a quick second, I'm going to take y'all back to Julius Caesar. I'm going to say, beware the Ides of March, because we saw this happen with Louis C.K. Louis C.K. got passes for saying the N-word because we was cool with him. He made a joke about pedophilia on SNL. And yep. He got a laugh, and we gave him a pass because we was cool with him. And then all this other shit came out.
But the thing is, I've talked to y'all about this shit.
Gets down. So,
but like, I've talked to y'all about this shit for a long time. Jen Kirkman said that everybody knows that Louis trapped these girls in the room and jerked off in front of them. Everybody knew that shit. It was, how far are we willing to allow the people that we admire and the people that we like to believe we see ourselves as if we were to ever get famous? Louis is a goddamn everyman. He's not sexy. He's not fucking a lady killer. So every regular ass white dude in America sees themselves as Louis. They were willing to give that motherfucker a pass.
Man, can we just objectively, though, like, man, when that story came out, like,
that shit broke my heart.
But at the same time, it's just like, I can't help but think of that image and just like, go like, wow. I mean, this is what this is what it resorted to for this dude. Like, really? Yeah. This is what you did? Like, what? It's so fucked up.
Power corrupts, man.
It's very fucked up, and I think it's the perfect exemplary of the idea that, like, and I'm not accusing him of sexual violence because that's not what he did, but it's exemplary of the fact that sexual violence is not about attraction. It's about power. It's about control.
Yep.
Because, like, let's keep it real. Like, Louis C.K. had been famous for a minute. He got long bread. Like,
yep, he'd been rich for a minute too. Yep.
If he wanted to get off, he could have. If he wanted to, like, run up on some young comic because she was cute, he could have. Like, he's smart. He's charming, despite the fact that he's not very attractive, and he's very fucking rich. Fuck. You get one of those things and you're going to get girls.
Right. But he chose to do it to these girls.
Exactly. Because this was about power and control.
Yes.
And it's not fucking okay.
No, it's about being trash. And we, like, so to bring this shit full circle, we allow motherfuckers that we like, and, you know, Chris Hardwick is king nerd. Right. For whatever reason. Chris Hardwick is a king nerd. There are so many motherfuckers who see themselves just like him. A person who's excited about nerd shit, who just happened to be at the right place, the right time in history, and in the industry through hard work, perseverance, and being trash. He got to be top of the hill and talk about the shit that everybody likes. And motherfuckers love him for that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, hey, it just came out this week. Like, let's talk about it. You know, that's why we have let R. Kelly get away with as much as he's gotten away with.
Fuck him. I have not.
Illiterate punk ass.
Look, he took Aaliyah to Indiana so he can marry her at 15. This motherfucker been nasty. We all knew
that in 1996?
Yep. And we gave that motherfucker a pass. I don't want to hear shit from anybody talking shit about anybody if you own some R. Kelly. I don't have no R. Kelly, nothing. I've been off that motherfucker for a long time. My conscience is clear. Fuck that.
I threw him in the trash a long time ago. That shit's not okay. But I'm saying it's an example of the lengths we will go to forgive people. Like, R. Kelly's career should have been over right then and there. Honestly.
Yes.
You don't take no little girl off to another state to marry her. Like, his career should have been done right then and there. Honestly. We gave him 10, 15 more years. Fucking ridiculous.
20, 25.
Yeah, no, it's fucking ridiculous.
I mean, the whole situation is crazy. But I think we're at a point now. And
wait.
Go ahead.
Was there an R. Kelly story this week? Is that why did you bring R. Kelly up?
Oh, yes. R. Kelly released a 19-minute song on his Instagram, I believe, called I Admit It, which was basically like 19 minutes of gibberish and illiterate bullshit about, you know, just a bunch of fucking excuses. Like, yes, I did this and I did that, but I'm not that bad. Yes, I did this, I did that, but I'm not that bad.
Man, you see, this dude's so far down my radar, I didn't even know that happened.
He admitted that parents pushed their little girls onto him he took them. But he's upset that because things didn't go the way they wanted it to go, that's why they came out in the public. Like, he's completely absolved himself from any kind of accountability. It's disgusting on a level that, like, honestly makes me want to, like, you know, run up on him in the streets. Like, it's disgusting. It's disgusting.
Man, I didn't even know that was a thing. He's just so far down my radar.
That shit came out this week, and motherfuckers was. There's people like, yeah, listen to it. But there's a whole bunch of other motherfuckers like, yeah, I'm not even going to get that shit in spins. I have not heard one bar. I never watched all the 13 clips of In the Closet or whatever the fuck that shit's called. Like, no, fuck that dude.
This was one of those joints that someone else did so that I didn't have to. They listened to it. And they broke it down.
Yeah, they took the bullets this time.
I will not give that a spin. I won't download it. I'm like, no. He gets nothing from me. Nothing.
Wow.
And yeah, that's our, as the black community, that's our albatross. That's our fucking cross to bear. Because we let that motherfucker live far too long. Fuck him.
Well, here's the thing. And I had this conversation in another community. But we have a reflex to protect, to circle the wagons because of everything that we've been through. And it's a beautiful fucking thing. But a predator can use that to their own advantage. And that's exactly what R. Kelly did. He took something that is a beautiful, wonderful reflex that we have and manipulated it to his own ends. And it sickens me.
He has been hiding behind it for more of his career than he hasn't at this point. Exactly. Just because this motherfucker made a song about two-stepping don't mean that he wasn't trying to one-step off into your daughter. get the fuck out of here.
Oh, no. And it's well known. It's well known. Like, you all know, like.
Look, there's motherfuckers who's listening to R. Kelly right now with Get in a Room in the Background.
No. No, dude, a huge family from Chicago. It's well known.
Yeah.
Motherfuckers would just park right outside the high schools, waiting for little girls to walk outside. It's an open fucking fact. Anyone will tell you the same thing.
Yeah, like, I don't want to hear it.
Disgusting. It's disgusting.
Good
God. I don't want to hear it. So guess what? You know, bringing this shit back.
Tangents.
Yeah, right? I believe that Chris Hardwick did some shit. And the conversation, and this is the part that we can't come up with a definitive answer. This shit has to be sit with you. Does being a trash human being, is that enough to take your show from you? We don't know. In some cases, yes. In some cases, no. But, you know, I do recognize that I think that holding the industry to a higher standard is not a bad thing. And this is the other part, and I'm going to get off this shit. Motherfuckers getting paid a lot of money to talk about some shit that they love, right? And you talking about, for all of this shit, we can't hold you to a higher standard of conducting yourself? Fuck that. There are kids who can't eat, parents who can't get jobs. You know, we got to send kids to school, otherwise they won't get meals in the day. You know, motherfuckers working 2 and 3 jobs just so their kids can have back to school clothes. You know, there's immigrants who come in here who are hawking all kinds of, you know, anything. They'll fix anything in your crib. They'll do any kind of work, anything, the shit that we turn our noses up. These motherfuckers go to work and do shit every day just because we have opportunity in this country. And you mean to tell me that because you make millions of dollars, not to say that you're not working hard, but you make millions of dollars and we can't hold you to a higher level of accountability? Fuck you.
There you go.
Yeah.
Tell you what, folks. I'm gonna put a poll up on the fan page. Y'all sound off. Because like Scott said, we can't give you an answer. Like, this is not definitive. So speak your piece.
Right. Yeah, I obviously I feel a little bit more strongly about this shit. And I'm okay with that. But we can't tell you how to feel about this shit. Y'all have to come up with this too. You know, I'm sure there are going to be some men's rights dudes who come from the other side of the conversation. That's fine, too.
Yeah, y'all, you know, y'all go ahead and speak your piece. Y'all going to be wrong, but, I mean, you can speak your piece. It's fine.
Yep. Dead ass wrong. So, in the shit that we can tell you about.
There you go.
We're going to fix some fucking franchises. As anyone who's listened to this show knows, the folks in the industry are listening. We don't get no goddamn credits. They for sure ain't sending us no motherfucking checks.
Not yet.
But they listening. So guess what, Hollywood? We about to do y'all some motherfucking favors, and we about to fix some of your sacred cows. And first up, and this one is actually one that is in probably the process of being fixed more so than any of the others up until this point. And we're going to start out with Ridley Scott's Aliens franchise. We all have some ideas, so this is how it's going to work. Everybody's going to take one, and then we're all going to say how we feel about ways that we could fix a franchise going forward, points in which we should stop it, and kind of move forward from. So, Scott, you want to hop into this Aliens?
Yeah. Let's talk about the I shared with Damon and Tone today about an article that I guess Fox had ran a contest and they picked 6 winners to make a short film set within the Alien universe that they're at. That it sounds like they may actually release theatrically as maybe like an anthology within the Alien universe. And I got to say, that's kind of a cool, fresh idea. And the Alien universe is in desperate need of this. Alien Covenant was not a great movie.
No, it
wasn't. I mean, look, Prometheus had its problems, but I think we liked it, but it had its problems. But when you leave Alien Covenant and go, this is how I felt when I left the movie. Wow, Prometheus was better.
Yeah.
And that's not what I wanted. And I was just damn, Prometheus was better than this. It is a problem.
Yeah, no, like the thing is, you felt like there was a lot. After Prometheus, you felt like there was a lot of places to go. You felt like they had introduced some really good elements. The engineers, you know, they had this, they created this weapon. It got, like, we didn't know how all this happened. And we felt like there was still a lot of, like, rubber to this road left.
Yes. And, well, and so what they did in Covenant is you make a character that you had just introduced in Prometheus suddenly the most important character in the entire Alien franchise. And that's just that's a poor setup. It's poor planning. It's poor writing. It's just I know that David was a cool character, but he doesn't have to be the reason why these creatures existed in the first few movies.
Everything happens.
Right. And that's Damon's point.
Yeah. Look, he's the reason why everything happens, and it's too much.
It's entirely too much. Look, the easy way to fix Alien, go back to that concept art that Neil Blomkamp put out. This guy, you know, look, not all of the stuff he made was a hit, okay? He had some sidesteps. District 9 is great, but everything else.
We're still waiting on District 10. We're still waiting on District 10. Chappie was weird. I think miscast.
It's hard to judge Chappie because when I saw it, I didn't hate it, but at the same time, kind of thinking back on it, it's kind of like, well, I don't know that it worked really well either. Yep. The stuff that I would point to is this. Look at his most recent output at that Oats Studios he came up with.
That's just dope. Did he do Hardcore Henry too?
No, he did. Let's see, he did Elysium with Matt.
Okay. With Charlton Copley's in that too.
Oh, yeah, and that's another one that was just kind of like, meh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, but, it told a really good story, and it also played against the haves and the have-nots.
Correct.
It was a very good socioeconomic kind of...
No, but there was a very uncomfortable racial element to that. Like, sure,
absolutely.
Very uncomfortable.
Yeah, but I think that was on purpose, which I liked.
I think you got to handle that better. Like... Y'all know how I feel about the Latinos. Like, yep. I think you got to handle that better. Like, that made me very uncomfortable.
I was not happy about that. He's South African.
No, so, I get it. And like, so there he is a completely different wherever he goes.
Yeah, he sees apartheid like running through. He sees legal apartheid. Like, you know, and he has a very different perspective.
And I'm not saying his perspective is wrong. I'm saying the execution was very heavy-handed. But, you're not the only uncomfortableness.
The point is that. A lot of people gave Blomkamp a pass early on because District 9 was such a good movie.
It was.
And the next two movies, however you feel about them, Chappie and Elysium, and, you know, they're varying degrees of good and varying degrees of bad and varying degrees of being frustrated. But when he then started putting out these concept images of what he would do with the Alien franchise. And I'll tell you what, look, I don't understand why Fox just didn't do this. He wanted to go ahead and do a direct sequel to Aliens. So he said, fuck Alien 3, fuck Alien Resurrection. You know, I don't even think he was going to say fuck Prometheus. He was going to use some of those ideas. Because I think one of the ships from Prometheus was in one of his concept art pieces. But most of it was, you know, it was Ripley and, hey, guess who's back? Michael Biehn playing Hicks again.
Yep.
He's back. We got Ripley dressed up in like an alien husk. And we got, I'm trying to remember what else. It was like one of the Prometheus ships that had been crash landed on a planet for, you know, eons. And there was a colony built up around it. And all it was just these images. And I'm like, look, why? Remember at the beginning of Alien 3, they killed Hicks. They killed Newt. We can admit, Alien 3 is not as bad as everyone remembers it is, but let's be real. That's really where this whole franchise derailed.
The missteps. It went in a really bad situation because the worst part about it was you had a lot of momentum coming out of Aliens with a nucleus that could have taken you through another two or three films.
Right.
If handled
with great characters. Yeah. With great characters.
You got a younger character who has room to grow.
Well, right. And then you had some great 80s actors, Sigourney Weaver, Lance Henriksen, Michael Biehn. I mean, they were all on board here.
Yeah.
Outstanding. Outstanding actors.
Yeah. They're not good. They're great. And then what you do, you take three of them out of the picture off camera.
Yep.
You don't even see them go. They're just gone now, and then they fill you in later. That shit is a huge misstep.
A huge one.
Absolutely. Because, you know,
so a direct sequel had
great impact.
Look, a direct sequel, even if they're all aged how they are now, I'm all on board for that. You could explain that away 100 different ways. Just, I mean, hell, just, you know, they've been in space that long and they finally got found. Okay, well, absolutely. There were cracks in each of their pods and now they've aged a little bit. That's why Ripley and Hicks look the way they do. Yep. It would maybe be hard to explain away Bishop if you wanted to keep using him because he's a robot, but, you know, you don't necessarily need him.
Well, no, but you do. If we're going to, and this is something that I recognize.
Yeah, synths, okay, you're right.
Synths are akin to your narrator, your placeholder in every situation throughout this particular universe. That's the reason why David is who he is. There's always a synth in every situation.
Okay. Right? Well, and I guess they could always do some de-aging shit on him like they did for other guys in other movies too.
Yeah, for Tron. So,
Or
you just
Tron.
Or you just do animatronic and you don't show him on screen very often.
But, yeah, I'd be on board with that too. And then the star
Damon's
of the
point
film,
though, like you need a neutral observer, and that should be the synth.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but then I think you could cast any young actress to play Newt.
Yep.
As the new lead, essentially.
Yep.
And you have them maybe be you could have them be a force to be reckoned with going around saving people from alien places where aliens have taken over. You could have them interact with a new group of anybody and have them be the protectors. Now it's not just Ripley. It's Ripley and company. Dude. It's Ripley and a badass robot and her badass sidekick and this new girl.
Slash daughter.
To be right. Who she's training to be the next Ripley.
Yeah, she's roughly Linda Hamilton.
Yes.
Right now? No. You had Ripley and Company. Ripley.
Say again?
I said you had me at Ripley and Company. I'll see that movie right now.
Essentially, it's Ripley and Company versus aliens. Man, I mean, what alien fans wouldn't want to see that?
Hell yeah.
I mean, that sounds great. Now, look, you can go in other directions too. Ripley's a good enough character where if you really wanted to explore her origin, you could. I don't know that I would, but you could. And the engineers provided, I mean, if you really wanted to do something a little better, throw Alien Covenant out the window and actually make a good sequel to Prometheus. I would be okay with that too.
So here's the part where Tone and I really got into this. Because we know that you really liked this story after Aliens. But Tone and I really like the idea of the world building with the engineers set up after Prometheus. You know,
there you go.
One of the things I really wanted to figure out was why did we create this perfect weapon?
Yeah.
Let me see who you were so afraid of that you had to create them.
Do it. Like, why is that engineer at the beginning of the movie at Prometheus? Why did he go there at all?
Yeah. Why did he break himself down to create life? What the fuck is that about?
Correct. And well, I mean, you heard that an early story point was that they were going to establish that Jesus was an engineer.
Okay, that's ridiculous. All right.
It's ridiculous, but at the same time, it's like, it's an explanation of some sort. I don't know that it's the explanation, but it does try and explain stuff that we didn't get answers to.
Yep, I agree. But we didn't get any answers, and that's the reason why Prometheus was it set up all the questions. Prometheus is the first two seasons of Lost, and Covenant is the last season of Lost.
Here you go.
Well, but he did that that's a multifold. He did that to push your button as well as saying that Damon Lindelof can't end things.
There you go.
I'm going to go grab my can of spinach.
Gentlemen, he did end Leftovers pretty well, so I will give him credit there. I liked the end of Leftovers quite a bit. So if you haven't watched that, highly recommended.
Yeah, no spoilers. That's just crazy.
No. It's good. And it's only three seasons, and it's one of one of the shows that got canceled way too early.
They told the story they need to tell there. But let's not get too far off of this shit.
I watched season one, and then I started season two, and I was like, Why am I going to do this to myself?
Tony, no, Tony. Season two is epic. Epic compared to season one. Season two is great.
Look, man,
Season three is also fair. Like, seasons two and three make season one look horrible in comparison.
Season three opens the world up a lot more. Yep.
But Scott, you don't understand what my ex-girlfriend Lost did to me.
And I'm still hurting inside. I understand, dude. Just, like, I get it.
She left you at the altar, dog.
Let me tell you, you didn't even
make it to the altar. You showed up to the park on a beautiful sunny day with a ring, a bouquet, and a little puppy to get ready to bend down on her knee, and she showed up with another dude. That's what she did to you.
I'm gonna take it a step further too. Okay. So Damon Lindelof did that with Lost. He wasn't able to finish. He did that with Prometheus. He was not able to finish. Yep. He actually wrote Marvel hired him to write a comic book. And this was at the height of the Ultimate Universe. They hired him to do an Ultimate Wolverine versus Hulk. And the first half of that was the first 3 months were back to back to back. They all came out and it was fantastic. And then there was a severe delay in the book. And the last three issues came out like 6 months later. And they were fucking garbage. Garbage.
Imagine that.
Yeah, that's my point. Like, so I've been burned by him multiple times. That's exactly right. But the leftovers, he does it. He comes and he delivers. I mean, and that's the latest big thing that he did. So maybe he's learning. I don't know.
he stuck the landing. He stuck the landing on that.
He did stick the landing. Absolutely did. So he's doing something right. But anyway, the point being is,
I'm going to watch the last two seasons. Okay.
Do it. Absolutely do it, dude. It's very, very worth it. But I'm down for a Prometheus sequel that explains some of the stuff we didn't get answers to as well. I'm for that. But you could do that and do an Aliens sequel. You could do both of them.
That's not an either or. We're just fixing your franchise.
But Fox, for some reason, has given all of the reins to Ridley Scott, or they did. And I think they saw what Alien Covenant did or didn't do. And now they've kind of taken a step back and they go, you know what? Why don't we let the fans try and handle this for a minute? You know, let's let them do it, because they know better than Ridley Scott does at this point.
So here's, and this is something I'm on record as saying, Ridley used Prometheus and Covenant to explain the mysteries of the universe through creation.
Yes. Right?
David is, and this is something on a deeper level. I think Ridley is very much jealous that he's not a woman, that he can't carry and create and birth life, because a lot of the things that he does is about, the mothers, the female protagonists, the strong female leads, the idea that, the mother aliens, the kind of self-creating alien, the aspects of all that, he can't create life. And David is so obsessed with the idea of creating life.
So what you're saying is, what we're seeing is, they say every great director has a stand-in. Yep. So what you're saying is David is Ridley's stand-in.
Correct.
All right. Huh. I mean, it makes sense when you look at the directors.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
Look at the director's filmography, and his penchant for female protagonists.
Yep.
They tend to be mothers. Like, that's real. Like, I think Damon might got something there. I really do.
Hey, I think so.
Regardless of that, I wouldn't let Ridley Scott have anything more to do with Alien. I think I'm he's good. Done. He said. I'm giving him all the credit. Alien is one of my all-time favorite movies. I love that thing.
Yeah.
But
look, let's be honest. And this was Ryan's point. Let's be honest. Like, Geiger did half of that work.
Yeah. The visuals, he set the tone.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Sure. Like Geiger did half of that work for Alien.
I mean, the fear of that xenomorph is seeing a creature that essentially impregnates you with, a penile tongue, yep. and then bursts out of you. It puts the fear of being pregnant in a man. I mean, that's essentially what it's doing.
Yeah, you're giving uncontrolled birth.
Yep.
Well, it's not just pregnancy. It's rape.
Honestly. Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, exactly.
Fear of rape and then impregnation.
Yeah.
And to Damon's point about Ridley's weird sort of identification fetishization with womanhood, femininity, it makes complete and total sense, because those are the things that a man would think about in thinking about
what it is. And then turn them into a horror film. Exactly. Let me take these aspects of women being a mother, and that's the aspect that I turn into a horror film. That's pretty strong to me.
Yeah, oh, yeah. No, it makes complete and total sense. But I think, to Scott's point, I give him all the credit.
Yeah.
He did it all right. He took it as far as he could take it.
He created an iconic universe. We just got to clean that shit up.
Now it's time to lateral that motherfucker to another running back.
Yep.
And let that person take it further. And I think Scott's idea of Neil Blom, I think that's...
I would hire Blomkamp and I'd let him run with an Alien sequel. That's what I would do.
I think that's the
bottom. Let's get that going.
Yo, what else are we doing? What I'm saying? What we got to lose?
Right. Yep. And I think the next piece, show me the world of the engineers that doesn't get decimated within 90 seconds on screen.
Absolutely. Let me see that. How does that work? How was their society? Why did they make us? Why did they make the aliens?
Let's live in that world for a little while, yo.
Yeah. Let me see it. I think, because the thing that excited me about Prometheus was that idea, holy shit. This is, really interesting. Let me see how they think. Let me see why they apparently were so fucking afraid of us that they made us and were fuck this shit, we're out.
Or the idea that we must have something that will kill all these motherfuckers.
Right. Why we were isolated. That's something, that's something that's a universal concept on, well, I shouldn't say universal considering this context, but that's a planetary concept in fiction. Man's isolation. It's just us. Where are the gods? Where are the other aliens, universes, whatever? Why are we so alone?
That shit is arrogant as fuck. But yeah, you're right.
No, but it is a planetary concept. Yeah. So why? You know what I mean? So let's analyze that. Okay, we have these engineers who came and they created us, and they looked at us and was like, "Nah, bro, you're the weakest link. Goodbye." That could be dope.
Yeah, I would love to see, our planet, our civilization fight against the engineers and the aliens be the things that level the playing field.
Oh yeah, that'd be great too.
You know what I mean?
Man, take it deep into the future. We don't decimate the engineer planet.
Right.
Take it deep into the future, and the engineers are finally okay, these dudes are flying all around space. These are our bastard stepchildren. We never liked them to begin with. All right, let's go handle this light work. That would be dope. Battle for survival. Whoo! That would be good, yo. That would be good. Because we've already talked about the levels of villains. You got your foot soldier villains, aliens. Yep. You got your mastermind villains, engineers. And then what makes a really good villain? Well, what makes a really good villain is a villain with a point.
A villain who believes that they are the hero of their own story.
Right. And all you have to do is look at what we've done with this beautiful, wonderful, special little blue marble. And be like, nah, you don't deserve it. Yep. And this is exactly why you don't deserve it. And no one could argue with that. We kill each other over the dumbest of shit.
Dumb shit.
How do we deserve to live?
Sometimes unarmed black men, riding cards or reading books or leaving stores, selling Lucy's, shit like that.
Mm-hmm. Here, I got one to wrap this up. Let's jump back to the Alien movie. Who plays Newt?
Oof. So what?
Wait, what? Who did he say?
Ellen Page.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
That's good.
That's real good.
That's good.
Yeah.
So, because I was about to ask for age range, and
I think you could go 25 to 35. I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, because it just depends on how far ahead we're gonna go. Because Newt was like 13 in Aliens, so we gotta figure out.
Well, again, you could jump again if we're going to a point where, let's say, their things are cracked.
Yeah.
And they're aging. Let's just say that's the idea. Newt doesn't. I mean, obviously, she's not gonna age as much as the other characters, but you know, I think you would still try and get it to be, if the first movie worked, you could develop another movie and just have them play another. You know what I mean? Just keep going if you wanted to go in that direction.
Yep.
So, I don't know, 25 to 30, something like that.
Okay. All right. So, who's yours, Scott?
Oh, boy. I don't know. I like the Ellen Page idea.
I do, too.
Just make it Ellen Page. Let's make it Get Out the Room official.
Yeah, I think so.
I'll support that. I like that.
Because if we were going somebody older, like, and this is just me, you know, if we were going to allow them to get a little bit older, I was going to say somebody like Toni Collette, right?
Yeah, we love some Toni Collette.
He's going on that Hereditary binge.
Well, it wasn't even that, because originally I was thinking...
Toni Collette is... No, Toni Collette is everything. Like, she can act, she can do physical...
You want her to be just a little younger than Ripley?
That's the problem I have. She's right. Going to be just a little bit younger than Ripley.
But here's... And keep in mind, kid, just roll with me here. I'm not necessarily saying that we have to do concurrent. We can show, like, maybe a Chloe Grace Moretz as as somebody like,
I,
you
see
know,
what you're saying.
You see what I'm saying? So when we get we get the Ripley apprentice aspect of it, right?
Okay, I got you.
All right. So the beginning of the movie, the beginning of the movie is Chloe Grace Moretz, you know, learning to be Ripley, and them together going and killing out. At some point, Ripley got to go. So right, then exactly. the majority of the story is Toni Collette.
How about Maisie Williams?
Maisie's good. Maisie's a little young. She's not even 20 yet.
She's too young.
I feel like she's too young.
Yeah.
She's in that weird little spot. She's not young enough, and she's too young. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Go ahead. The reason why I say Chloe Grace Moretz, because we've seen her as Hit Girl. We know she can do the physical stuff.
You know what? That's true.
So,
and she can act.
Yeah, and she's a good actress.
Because let's be real here. Like, you can't throw no bunk actress in this role. Like, no. Sigourney Weaver is one of the GOATs.
Yep.
She is one of the GOATs. So we cannot have no bunk actress.
Plus you need that tough aspect for, you know, she's going to be playing not only Sigourney Weaver, but also like an old grizzled Michael Biehn I mean, she's going to be playing off of, you know, an ancient Lance Henriksen. So, I mean.
Right.
Yep. And I'm okay with that. So, yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, that's that. I like that, too.
Yeah. So, you know, just kind of gave you a little something to work with.
All right, studios. So we done gave y'all, like, by my count, that was just. That was a solid two different takes you could take on the alien universe. Yep. They were solid. So y'all write that up. I expect to see it. No more bad alien movies. You have no more excuses.
No more excuses. We gave y'all what it is. Next up, Tone, your pick. Go ahead, set it up.
Oh, man. Oh, shit.
Here we go.
Okay, y'all. So it is time for a remake of the one, the only, the original, They Motherfucking Live. You know, They Live was, you know, whereas, Night of the Living Dead was mostly about, like, mindless consumerism, They Live was about like unchecked capitalism, basically, and like how we let the upper power structure crush the lower power structure, you know, and then like a fight against that. And it was topical for the time. It's topical again, folks.
Akin to Scanners.
Yes, absolutely. It's time. It's time. Nobody knows how Trump got elected. Like, we're like, what the fuck? What the fuck? How did that happen? We had no idea. Like, it's totally time to be like, okay, this is how that happened. There is an overarching, there's an overarching organization that controls this shit. And guess what? They're aliens with no fucking faces, and they're scary. But they will co-opt humans to work towards their end. Like, this is also a theme. Wait, let me stop. I almost spoiled some shit I shouldn't have. All right, never mind.
Ooh, spicy.
So, it's time for that again. And I think what we do is we bring back King David. I'm not even giving him his original name anymore. It's just King David. We bring back King David. We make him play Whistler, so to speak. We make him play the mentor. He mentors two new cats.
So has he known that these guys have been there all along too?
All along. They made a major setback.
I like that. Yep.
You know, they weren't doing too much, but he's been keeping an eye on them. When he notices that they start like ramping up again, that's when he recruits some two new cats.
Okay.
Now, I think what they should do is recruit two Latino cats. One Latino cat who's like noticeably Latino, and then like another Latino cat who's, you know, a little pocha, you know, a little whitewashed.
Okay.
And my casting idea is Michael Pena and Aubrey Plaza. Because you didn't even know that Aubrey Plaza was Latina, did you?
Wow, that's good shit.
But I did. And they can play off of that whole, you know, Pocha Chicana, you know, Pocha Chicano thing. And Michael Pena is going to be perfect for that because he's, you know, he's comedic. And so is Aubrey Plaza. I think that they would play well off each other. But as we've seen in Legion, and as we've seen in Ant-Man and the Wasp, they both can do the action shit. And the whole plot, you know, they do their thing. King David trains them up. He tells them how to look for him. He tells them what to do. They got a big battle.
He gives them the glasses.
Gives them the glasses, you know. They have a similar fight scene. We got to go back to the one of the most iconic.
I was just thinking, like, wouldn't it be great if they did a almost hit for hit fight scene, but just kind of updated a little bit?
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about. We do a very, very similar fight scene, and he opens their eyes. And then when the time comes, they all go on a battle together. Of course, he dies saving their bacon. They die, supposedly, and then crawl themselves out of the crater, out of the mess, out of the muck. And then the last scene we have is the aliens. Look, one of the alien lieutenants looking at the general saying, "They live." Talking about the guys that done fucked up all their shit.
Yep, the plot's in the ending's in the title. Just like 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah, the ending's in the title. Like, and then the cool thing is, like, we can fill all the rest of the shit in, man. Like, there's so much to go with. There's, you know, a very attractive woman with a not-so-attractive guy. There's all that. There's a white-looking Latina with a, you know, obviously not white-looking Latino. There's that. Like, and then there's the all the jokes before King David dies between, like, black people and Latinos.
So this is clearly set in L.A. then, right?
Yeah. Oh, no. We're still in Los Angeles. Okay. Absolutely. And then we also got the, you know, we got the little couple of reminiscent shots about Roddy Piper. And he just passed. So, like, that's going to play. Like, this is done. This is official. I don't know what else you want from me, Hollywood. Like, I casted it. I wrote it. I don't know what you want from me.
I like it, man.
I do too. I like the touch at the end about paying up to Roddy too. You got to have him. You got to have his spirit somewhere in there too.
Yeah. Oh, you absolutely do, man. Look, this is an iconic movie. No one could say anything else. And like, you know, Roddy did his thing in it. You know what I mean? So like having King David like take up the mantle and like train these cats up. And then just like, you know, give us a little bit of like, give us a couple flashbacks. And you know what? Hey, that's going to save y'all some money. Because all you got to do is just patch in a couple of the scenes from the old movie.
Look, boom. Somebody got to have them super Iditarod boots, though.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, yeah.
Got to have a super Iditarod, General.
Now, the only thing I haven't figured out is director. Now, I'm going to go super, like, everything else I laid out perfectly. They can take all that shit. The other thing I'm going to do right here, this is going to be a little bit fucking controversial, but, like, just work with me for a little bit. I say Spike Lee. Because he's political. And if you look at The Outside Man, like, he can do action, and he's actually really good with outside material.
Oh, Inside Man? Yeah.
Yeah, well, I love Inside Man.
It's a fantastic movie. So Hollywood wouldn't finance a sequel.
No, I know. It's a goddamn shame. Have somebody write this up. Toss it to Spike.
Like, look, if he pulls off Black Klansman, I think it could happen.
I mean, he's gonna get a chance to go do something real big if that movie hits.
Yep.
I think it's gonna hit.
I think it is too.
I do as well. It looks good. I mean, and they got two great leads too, so that helps.
Yeah. It doesn't look like usual Spike fare, but it is right in Spike's sweet spot. I think this might be the one.
It looks like
exactly Inside Man, right? Exactly. And if we can get this, then maybe we can get the Inside Man sequel, especially because everybody in the cast
fucking awesome.
Clive, Jody, Denzel, Chiwetel. Everybody said they're down for the sequel. Nobody would help them finance the film.
It was so good. So good.
And it's set up for a sequel, man. I mean, like, it wants it.
It needs it.
Yeah. Yes,
we need it.
Yeah, right. We need shit.
We just need Hollywood on board. Yo, you know what, Hollywood? Come holler at us. Get out the room on Facebook. Like, if you just don't know what to do and you want to, like, you want to figure out how to make this happen, just come holler at one of us. We'll fix it for you.
Get out the room productions. You get all three, bitches. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. Look, man, we be like, nerd. Get out the room productions.
For real. I like it. We'll fix your shit. We didn't give y'all two for free already.
Yep.
And another two right now. So come on, get it at us.
So they live. I love what I'm hearing, and I really like the Latin turn. You know, because
I do as well.
I think there's a lot of fresh.
It's fresh.
It is fresh, and you know, I work with professional development for minorities, brown folks. Blacks, Latins, Native Americans. And there are cultural dynamics at play with quote-unquote real Latin folks, the cool kids who speak Spanish as their first language. They grew up in primarily Latin neighborhoods. They have a lot of the cultural things that we would kind of
stereotypically associate with
that we would associate with, you know, Latin backgrounds. And absolutely. Then there are the cats who are decidedly Latin, maybe second generation. They may not even speak Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they may have fought against some of those cultural background associations and stereotypical things that they've had to go through their whole lives. They've kind of distanced themselves from it. Like, there's a lot of really good, meaty stuff at play there that you could really pull out in a film. So I think that's a good look, Tom.
Yeah, man. No, there's just as many internecine battles between them as there are between us. with our bougie black folks and real black folks and field Negroes and
house Negroes.
House Negroes, yep. Like,
yeah,
all that stuff is right there. And to have a black man do it, like,
or we find a Latin director. We find somebody who speaks directly to this experience. You know,
absolutely.
Maybe it's a Latin female.
That's probably the way to go. That's the way to go.
Maybe there's a Latin female who's dying to get a shot. Maybe this is her film.
If we decide not to do, I love the idea of a Latin female director, but if we decide not to do two Latin leads, what we could do is replace Michael Peña with John Cho.
Yeah.
He's a heavy Korean, environment in Los Angeles, and they got their own issues too.
Cho's so fucking 43 though.
Yeah, but he doesn't play 43.
But he is. So if it's not Glenn,
Glenn. Stephen Cho.
Yeah. Steve Young, right?
Young, excuse me. Yes. That would work too.
Oh yeah, that actually would work. And you could look to that Mayhem movie for a little bit of a...
Yeah, he can do that shit.
Yeah.
Well, Walking Dead, so he can do it.
Yeah, Walking Dead, yeah.
And then
now we have sexual tension because we have people who actually look like they could be together.
We out here. Okay.
I'm giving y'all casting options and everything. Come on, man.
Seriously.
Come on, y'all. Make this happen.
Like, just cut the check, though.
Just cut the check. Just
this shit gonna
check.
Be up. So if y'all do it, just go ahead and cut the check on the front end because we take it to court. We gonna play this shit. And the judge gonna look at
it.
Because the judge gonna look.
I got a director for you. What about Del Toro?
What'd you say?
What about Del Toro?
Perfect.
Visually, it might lend. Somebody would have to pull him back, but I think he could really do this.
Yes, somebody would have to pull him back because he's big on magic realism, which is like a thing that he's into.
Yeah, and They Live could do some of that very well.
Well, and that's exactly what I'm talking about. But you're right. You need a good producer to, like, pull him back a little bit. So let's bring in Blumhouse.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be cheap. It's going to take a little bit of a horror turn. I mean, there's also... This could be in even... So let's take maybe... The Del Toro back. Let's go a little bit more in terms of Get Out or James Wan. You know what I mean? Like maybe a little bit smaller storytellers, folks who could get that interpersonal communication. You mean
James,
like it?
Knock this out the bat.
James Wan, Jordan Peele.
And this is right up his fucking alley.
That's what I'm saying. The interracial. Conversations, the dynamics. Jordan Peele can really do this. Or even the aforementioned Boots Riley. Like, let's find, like, especially now we're talking about these visuals.
Boots could do this. Boots could do this.
So I think that,
I don't trust him to write it. I gotta be honest. I don't trust him to write it.
Well, it'd be a little bit more revolutionary than, but... Truth be told, this is a revolutionary story. So,
it really is. It really is, and it always was. It always was.
Just got to make sure you have somebody to pull everybody back.
Mm-hmm. You need somebody with their hands on the reins. That's all it is. You know what? Fuck. You could even call Will and Jada, put Overlook Productions on this.
Yeah.
You know they keep shit pretty tight. They keep it. You know what I'm saying, like.
But they don't answer to anybody. That's their problem. They don't answer anybody.
Yeah, but they play it very safe. And that's what you would need on a story like this, because this could get very wild.
I'm okay with that. I think wildness is not a bad thing. But I like where we're going here. I think this is a fantastic start. And to be very honest with you, I think because it hasn't been as explored as the Alien universe, I actually like what we've come up here better than what we've done for Alien.
Well, we've had more places to go, you know what I mean? And this is very, again, with the Purge, with what's going on in our country right now, like, this is very, like, now. Like, yo, studios, if y'all gonna do this, you need to cut this check, like, immediately. Have somebody write it. We all know a couple screenwriters. get this done. Because, like, this is the real deal.
Let's make it happen.
Yeah. Y'all could, we could get this done. I mean, we you know, we got some pretty high names. You know, Aubrey Plaza, Michael Pena, Stephen Nguyen. But, I mean, he's not really doing nothing. So, I mean, I don't know. Y'all want to go budget for, like, a quick second?
Scott, what do you think budget-wise on this, especially with the visual effects?
Wait, say again, please.
Production budget.
Oh.
If we're doing a Blumhouse joint, so it's going to be a conservative budget.
And we're doing
25 yeah.
tops. Tops. Yeah, tops.
Yeah. Yeah. Running time?
93.
Yeah, hour and a half.
Yeah, 93, 100 minutes at most.
No, 100 minutes tops.
Yeah, 100 minutes at most.
We have a rule with this shit. We have a rule with this shit. Like, it's got to be, you know, if you need more than an hour and a half, there's a problem. Yep. Let me see. I'm worried about the budget effects, but things are cheaper than they used to be. And if we do practical effects, which actually play on screen better than the CGI digital shit, then we're probably okay.
Well, it also depends on the director, because, you know, you get Del Toro, the amount of effects that he's going to create, which most of them will be practical, are still going to cost you a ton of dough.
Right.
So, you know, just something to think about.
That's true. I think, given what we're talking about here, I think we're talking about probably 30,
35. Yeah, I mean,
just to give us some space.
25 to 35. You can make it for 25. I think anything less is going to be real difficult to pull off.
Right. All right, Hollywood. So your budget's 25. I said 35. We'll call that an outlier. Hollywood, your budget's 25 to 30. We can give you a list of the directors. We didn't give you the actors. We didn't basically gave you the plot, wrote it all out for you.
Yeah.
I mean, am I wrong?
Look, I'll tell you this. If there's an opportunity to engage younger, newer talent, there's a young lady by the name of Amber Ruffin who has been writing episodes of a Comedy Central show called The Detroiters, which is really fucking good, man. Her writing is great. She has this incredible sense of humor, and she gets weird relationships between people. If you watch The Detroiters, I think you're going to understand that she could pull this off. It would be like her first big show, her first big movie, but I think she could do it. I'm just throwing something out there for you.
But if she gets weird, awkward relationships,
exactly,
this might be the move.
That's what I'm saying.
This might be the move.
That's what I'm saying. So, you know, Hollywood again. So if it
should happen, now we gave you the screenwriter. Come on, Hollywood.
We didn't give you the new shit. We didn't give you the behind the scenes shit. So just go ahead and send the checks.
And she's a female.
That's like, right.
What you want from us?
We about inclusion out here. So, yeah, that is Aliens and They Live. Now it's time for my shit. We're going to try and keep it brief because we've been out here for a minute. But
a little bit.
Y'all know what I'm going to do. It's a Nightmare on Elm Street.
This fucker right here.
You knew what I was
going to do. Y'all, I'm mad. Like, Damon sandbagged me, man. He came with the 1-2 punch. And then he hit me with the uppercut from nowhere. I wasn't ready.
I let them go first. I let them get their little ideas out there, but I had some casting in the background. I knew what I was going to do. So check it out. The remake with Jackie Earle Haley that came out a couple years ago had a really fantastic setup, but a real serious misstep. We felt like the biggest miss of that particular film was they set him up as a child molester. And, you know, they played around with the did he or didn't he at one point. The biggest thing that I would change moving forward would be that he didn't actually do it.
Yes.
He was just a really, really nice kid who loved little kids and couldn't get opportunities in his own life. You know, you can do a really nice backstory on Freddy Krueger, whose wife couldn't have kids. She dies. He's alone. He finds happiness through kids. Somebody right. catches him behind, you know, at school, maybe in a compromised position with a kid, but he's not doing anything wrong. And the witch hunt right. begins. They burn him. They kill him. And now he's coming back to get them all. And I think at this point, let's stop killing kids. Let's go after Absolutely. The adults. Let's go no after children. The adults.
Yes. No so children.
No children. Teenagers. No teenagers. We're yeah. talking about grown-ass adults. We're going after all the parents. So what we do now, we age Freddy a little bit. He's a little bit older. He's a little bit larger. And my casting for the new Freddy Krueger
would be... Hold on.
Go ahead.
No, wait.
Go ahead.
Let us give our casting just so you can, like, blow us out the water.
All right. Okay. All right. Scott, go ahead. Right. Who did you cast?
No, you go first. I'm going off the top here, so I'm going to have to think about it for a minute.
Mm. All right. So my idea was to take it back to the last remake. Like, I really like Jackie Earle Haley, you know.
Yeah, Haley, yeah, he's good.
Yeah, he had the voice down. I felt like, you know, his body movement, his body language was good. You know, I really liked him. So, like, that's who I, you know, that's what I wanted for Freddy. You know, mm-hmm. and again, to Damon's point, like, they did a really good job with the, like, did he, you know, creating doubt. Like, did he do this? Did he not do this?
Yep.
So, like, everything about that I liked, I just felt the execution was off.
Yeah, I thought so, too. I thought they missed some really good opportunities. I even like the ideas of the micro naps. Because we've yeah. all been awake, but we fall asleep.
Oh, absolutely.
Your brain just starts to fall asleep. It just puts you on pause, and you don't realize it until after you've already woken up.
Yep. And you're like, holy shit, what the fuck just happened?
Yep.
What happened is Freddy just stabbed you in your eyeball.
Yep. Because you can no longer tell the difference between reality and sleep.
You like that, Scott?
I do. Yeah,
so Scott, go
I'm
ahead.
I'm going all out there with this one, man. We're throwing in Skeletor from the first Purge. He's Freddy Krueger.
Holy shit.
I we're like going that
completely
a lot.
Wild. We're throwing a bone out to a brand new dude. We're letting him kind of do what he did in that movie.
Scott, you don't have to say nothing else, yo, dude.
That is inspired casting, sir.
It is very good job, sir. I would fucking salute you right now.
Yeah, that God, you know it. What? That's actually that's on par with my choice. For it creativity, really and I actually like that shit a lot, and I might even like it more.
Right? Hmm. Like, when you think about the politics and shit?
Yeah. The politics and the possibilities?
Holy shit!
This is a real... let's explore this a little bit. Okay. So now we have a black man who worked at a school with these mm-hmm. these kids, and these...
Orlando, you know, Castillo.
Yep, these white kids, oh. you know, these white parents saw him. They didn't really know what was happening, and they assumed there was impropriety. They assumed that he was doing something he wasn't. But he was innocent. They killed him.
Right.
So guess what? Now he's coming back to kill all of them. I like that shit a lot.
And now when we think about how the fact that, like, in the original, Nancy's father was a sheriff.
Yep.
Now we got a whole nother thing about unaccountable cop killing. Yo, we could take this some places, yo.
So I'm gonna go ahead and tell y'all. I was gonna choose Andy Serkis as Freddy Krueger, just because I think his ability to work within the dreamscape realm, the makeup. I think as an older Freddy, a little bit larger Freddy, because Jackie Earle Haley's on like 5'6", 5'7".
Yeah, he's a little dude. He's
so
a little dude.
Working with adults may not work as well. Right. And Andy Serkis is a little bit bigger. So I think he would do really well as like a menacing, kind of Spectre in terms of Freddy, but I really like this idea of Skeletor. In matter of fact, I think it's a little bit more poignant going down this particular road. I like this a lot.
You guys nailed that a little bit too. I think if you explore that aspect, you automatically get political with it too, and you're bringing it up to age as well.
Well, yeah, that's the point. That's what we do. We fix your shit, Hollywood. We fix your shit.
I had the icemaker on, so I put you on mute. My bad. Yeah, Scott, you got that one off, bro. That's
Scott,
yours.
Scott, you knocked that motherfucker right out the goddamn park. You know,
that was dope.
Skin
that's
up
dope.
The ball.
That's dope.
You know, I mean, and in The Purge, like, he showed, like he can be menacing. He can be weird. Like, he also played a little bit, like, on the, like, slide tip for a little bit. Like, I think, honestly, just in what we saw from him in The Purge, that the actor's got range. And that's what you really need for Freddy. One of the points I was going to make is, like, no more serious Freddy. Like, I want asshole Freddy. Like, I want, you know, the dude who's
We got to be in the middle. We got to be in the middle, though. Like, we don't – so the Freddy from number two.
Well, no, not super jokey Freddy. No,
yeah.
Not,
so we want number
that.
Three. We not want number that. Three.
Yes, yes.
Because I feel like number three, you know, the Dream Warriors Freddy is probably the most well-received Freddy. It's the most well-received film outside of the original. I think that's the Freddy that we're shooting for, the Freddy that's having fun, the Freddy that's
exactly.
playing on all
that's
of your fears.
Say, instead of asshole Freddy, I should say fun Freddy. Like, this is a dude who, like, look, he knows this is really kind of like an anti-hero. Like,
yeah,
this is exactly
right.
What we talk about, like, perfect idea of a villain. Like, he is a villain who believes he's the hero.
Yep.
Like, that is Freddy.
And depending on where you are, you might believe he's the hero.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what we're talking about. And I really think that the actor from Skeletor from the first Purge, I feel like he can pull that off just in what I saw from him.
I think so too.
And again, he's a larger dude.
Yeah.
You know, so that's gonna be better for taking out, you know, adults. He showed in The Purge that, like, he can do some action. He definitely can be menacing. And I also think he'd be, like, I think if pushed, like, he obviously can play insane. And I think if pushed, I think he could probably be charismatic as well.
I think this is the
underside of threat. That's the underside of Freddy. Like, Freddy is also, like, motherfucker's magnetic, like, he's charismatic as well.
No, and that's exactly how the kids, they gravitate to him. And the other people in the school gravitate to him. You know, let's say that there was a Latina who worked as a custodian or, you know, something in a school. So, well, maybe she's a school counselor and she knew that he was innocent, but she never said anything because the rich white folks in the town you know, pressured her not to say anything, and she kept quiet.
So he comes for her first.
She got to go.
You knew better. You knew better, and you let me go.
You let me die.
And now this is a whole internecine issue, because it's like, you colored folks just like I am, and you let these people do this shit to me. Like, you know better. And then it's like, hey, I got a family. I got to, you know, like, I had to protect my own. I'm like, I'm sorry. Yeah, I sacrificed you up on the lamb of, like, capitalism. Like, yo, we could,
There are so
many places we can do with this.
Like, let's take it a step further. Think about it like this. We have the ability where Freddy can go back to pre-burned Freddy. So he's talking and he's like, you could have saved me. You didn't do shit. He's no longer burned. He's just regular.
He's just talking to her. So now she's looking at ghost.
She's just talking to him, and all of a sudden she's like, you know, I had a family too. My girls were in school. I couldn't risk it. You know,
I got a mortgage, I got a car payment.
Yep.
Shit's rough out here.
And he's like, too bad. And this motherfucker turns back to the burn Freddy. Oh man.
Yo, we just wrote the opening scene.
Mm-hmm.
You realize that?
Mm-hmm.
We just wrote the opening fucking scene.
Yep.
mm-hmm. Damn. I like all of what I just heard.
Scott, you started that shit.
Yeah, this was yours, man.
Like, Scott, damn, you knocked that motherfucker out the.
Look, I'll tell you where this came from. I remember when I saw the movie. I saw First Purge with my brother, and on the last show I kind of hit it. I really liked that character quite a bit, and I remember thinking during the show, if you hit him a little harder on that, you can kind of create a new modern day. We haven't had a good modern day iconic scary character like that. And I look, he wasn't on screen a lot, but you know what? Think about the old school horror characters. They weren't on screen a lot.
Yeah.
Why did Freddy work in the first movie? He wasn't on screen a lot.
Yeah, it was only 13 minutes of the entire film.
Exactly. I mean, think about even Jaws. Jaws the shark is not on screen a lot.
At all.
You don't. I think you get a solid 6 minutes, if that.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, the best scene in the first Purge is him traveling through the crowd with all that tension building on who he's going to kill, what he's going to do,
and
how he's going to kill
him. And his face vacillating between craziness, amusement,
enjoyment, anger,
content,
and frustration,
all of it.
He goes through the whole gambit.
Yeah.
That's Freddy right there. Like, seriously, put a fedora and a fucking shitty Christmas sweater on that motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
That's Freddy.
Yep.
God damn it, Scott. You knocked that motherfucker off the park, man. I take my goddamn hat off to you.
Yeah, this is some good shit.
So I would actually, so to change things just slightly, he still plays Freddy, that's fine. But I would actually still go the youth route, and I would do a remake eventually, maybe in a sequel, maybe even in the first movie. Let's look at redoing Nightmare 3.
You went to Dream Warriors.
We recast the Dream Warriors.
So I know Anya Taylor-Joy is one of them.
Oh yeah, hey, there we go. Okay, now you're thinking where I'm. Let's cast them with the young hot actors now. You mean you could go?
I don't even know actors. You know,
No. Not that's not what I just.
I know what
saying,
you mean.
Like,
I know what you mean.
Let's just cast them with like the. Let's load it. Let's put. How about John Boyega? How about?
Oh shit! I was actually gonna do the kid from Cloak and Dagger.
Oh okay. Hey, I like that one too.
Yeah, I was gonna do the black kid from Cloak and Dagger. He's young. You know, he's new. He does. The show is better than I think a lot of people give it credit for. I like that kid a lot.
Yeah,
If I was going to pick a new Nancy, I was going to go two ways. Okay. If you're going to go the kid route, I was going to go with Storm Reid, the lead from A Wrinkle in Time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, that's okay. I like that.
Okay.
Now.
So then, older, so Anya Taylor-Joy is Kristen?
No, I'm pretty sure her name is Storm Reid.
No. Anya Taylor-Joy ends up playing the Patricia Arquette role.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean for Stormy. Yeah. Right. I got you. Yep.
And if we go older, like we talking about right now, this is my idea. So we have a kid who's a little bit older. Let's say all the kids that Freddie was like, you know, buying ice cream for.
By the way, maybe this movie is the sequel to what we just pitched, or, you know, a sequel to what we just pitched.
Could be. Let's keep
maybe,
going with this casting idea. I think we can find a good mixture. They don't even all have to be the same age.
No, because I'm going somewhere. I'm going somewhere. Let's say that all these the kids that Storm was, Freddie was like buying candy for and all that other jazz. Like, you know, they like, you know, little kids, 10, 11, 12, whatever. Let's say one of them was a little bit older. You know, she was from a broken home, and so she liked to kick it with Freddie because she didn't have to be home. You know what I mean? Like, it was something to do.
Yep.
So these kids are like 10, 11, 12, 13. She's like 14 or 15. Like, not, no. Let's break that down. Let's say 8 to 10, she's 13 at the time that Freddie gets taken out.
Okay.
And, you know, we have a time gap. Freddie comes back, it's like 2 or 3 years later, something like that. She's a solid teen now. I'm thinking Emma Kinney. From Roseanne, from Shameless.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay. So now we have a new Nancy. This is his main target. He was like, yo, I did, like, you told me about what was going on with your family.
I held you down.
I stood up for you. I took care of you.
You, and let you still them let them me. Burn me.
Yes. Yes.
Mm. Mm. That's pretty good. So
that's the one he stalks. It's never the one he kills, because he do actually still got love for her.
Yeah.
Like a love-hate relationship.
Yeah, but he kills everybody else in her life.
Exactly.
Parents, he takes
everyone
go
out around her.
Everyone mm-hmm. gotta go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a really good one. I like that. Hmm. Okay. All right.
Man, do we not just hand these motherfuckers like a?
We absolutely like, did.
Here's the deal. New Line Cinema is called The House That Freddy Built for a reason.
Correct.
So, like, yo, new studio, y'all need some help. If y'all need a hit, we just did it.
We just look, you could even call the young little Asian girl off of Andy Mack so she can expand her brand a little bit. Getting a little horror film. Oh, shit.
That would be good because she can do action.
I would love to see that happen.
That would be good too.
So, no, like, I'm not saying you replace her with anybody. She's just part of the group too.
No, just throw in the group. Yeah. No, I'm just saying, like, the original Freddy movie, you know, most of the Freddy movies are, you know, to paraphrase a Scott term, impossibly white.
Yes. So they are.
And we can darken these joints up just a little bit.
Yeah,
and,
anybody, you know, outside of Kincaid.
Right. In 2018 America, like, it would be good from a marketing standpoint. So, like, yeah. Yo, we got y'all.
Like, in the one black person, you know, Skeletor Freddy is like, look, I hate to do it to another brother, but you got to go too.
And that could be a whole conversation. And could be a really good scene. Like, real talk, could be a really good scene.
This motherfucker just wakes up in a room full of white people. in a room full of cops.
And they're just constantly approaching him. He keeps backing up, and they're just like sort of like mannequins.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
And it's
just yes,
a room full of librarians with cell phones.
Oh man.
Ask him for his permit.
Dude, that's so good.
Like, he goes to another room and it's just a room full of permit patties calling on, like, I need that.
Right. And then Freddy shows up.
Look, for all my thin blue line folks, you know, I'm not trying to say that y'all are bad. I'm just telling you that is some black dude's worst nightmare.
And that is what Freddy does. He plays with your fucking fears. Tell me why Freddy don't show up in a cop's uniform.
Dude, I'm like, what if he fell asleep? He's tired. He falls asleep, you know, in his garage. And he wakes up at a traffic stop.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't know how he got there. He thinks he fell asleep at the wheel.
That's it.
He gets pulled over.
Dude.
Oh, yo. Dude. Seriously. Come on, yo.
This shit is scaring me just talking about this shit.
Hey, by the way, the last episode and this one, we keep calling dude Skeletor. The actor's name is Rotimi Paul.
Correct. Correct.
Give him some respect, yes. Let's put some respect on his name.
Yeah, we definitely got to put some respect on his name. Rotimi Paul's really talented dude. Physically, as an actor, he uses his body incredibly well to convey emotion. Well. I think he could do this shit. And Scott, shout out to Scott again. It's a great idea.
I think he could do this shit. I really do. I truly do. I truly do. We need to, God damn it, we need to call a production company. Shit. Like, we just made this shit.
Write this shit up and sell it.
Okay, so, like, all y'all folks out from Grimm and, like, Supernatural and... What's the other show we fixed? What's the other one?
I mean, which one? Take your pick.
I know, take like whatever. All y'all motherfuckers out there who like we done fixed your shows, like come holla at us. We done made this. This is fucking phenomenal, B. Like y'all need to holla at us.
Seriously.
God damn it, Scott. Like you nailed, man. I'm mad.
Yeah, like I'm not even gonna take Andy Serkis any further because Rutini is a better choice.
No. Scott fucking killed it.
Yeah, he killed him. He killed this one. This is fantastic. It's good shit. Yeah, man. Anything? Is there anybody else you'd cast in this before we say our goodbyes?
I think that I mean, obviously, if we're doing this and we're gonna, I always like when you do reboots to find spots for some of the older or original actors too. Yeah. I know that what's her name doesn't really act a lot. Heather Langenkamp doesn't really do much acting anymore, but
yeah, she's an art director. She does art and
she does effects. Makeup. She does makeup. Yeah,
she does effects.
No reason why she can't. There's no reason why she can't be a Guyton Campbell.
I think find a spot for her somewhere.
Look, she has a special place in her heart for this. Like, whenever there's anything, she always kind of shows up. What I would really like is for Patricia Arquette to get her real curtain call. Because Bob Shea in New Line fucked her because they wouldn't give her any type of contract for Nightmare 4. So her character gets killed with some new person that they put in there, but nobody even knows who this is. You don't even get the relevance of it. Or even
let's make her the mother of the actress.
Yeah, absolutely. And let
and let's give her a really good death because it's like,
check it out. She could be Storm Reed's mom.
Yeah. She could be Storm Reed's mom. She could be Iman Kimmy's mom. Either way, don't matter.
Right. Like, don't matter.
Either way.
All right, who's Robert Englund playing?
The principal.
The principal, cool. Yeah.
He's a principal. Okay. Yep.
He's a principal. He's a principal that knew Rutini was he's like, I suspected him. Or, you know, maybe he doesn't know that he's innocent. Maybe he's the person that was always...
He's on the fence.
Maybe he was always on him. Maybe he was part of the lynch mob. Maybe he's one of the first people... He's like, you know, mm-hmm. I never wanted you to work here, but because of whatever program, I had to keep you. Which Robert Englund can do very well.
No, Robert Englund can do whatever we throw at him. Like, whatever we throw at him. But, like, he's definitely the principal. And he's one of the first to die, for sure. And then, you know, Nancy, she's a guidance counselor. You know what I'm saying? Like, but she don't die. Like, yo, don't y'all fucking tantrum my Nancy. Like, we don't have a problem. Don't touch her.
Look, I don't think Heather Langenkamp should die just because, you know, that's just a little personal thing. I think how you get Robert Englund is you put him... So, it's twofold. Robert Englund is a dude that always believes that he stands up for kids as the principal. He believes that he's protecting kids. His worst nightmare is somebody who hurts kids. So you dress him up as Freddy. And then then Rutini, the new Freddy, comes and kills him.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
I like that.
So you still...
A little bit of that old school flavor.
Yeah. So you get him in the makeup one more time. You get him in the hat. You get him in the glove. You know what I mean? You get him going
just
through
one
the whole
more
thing.
Time.
One more
Give
time.
It to us one more time.
One more again.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, you know what? It's something that he does for the kids every Halloween.
Yeah.
Like a scary thing or whatnot. Have him embody that. But it's like a scary, nice memory for the kids. And then you have Rutini take advantage of that. And like be that thing that they thought was safe.
Get him.
Dude, we did it. Like, we didn't wrote this whole damn movie. I don't know what y'all want from us, man. Like, seriously.
Well,
how many things you want us to fix?
Well, more. Yeah, I really like this. Like, the three franchises we talked about, now you have a new Freddy for a new generation. We've given you some They Live going in a completely different generation, different direction. You can go into K-Town in L.A. You got some Latin folks. You know, you can explore so many different demographics. And running straight on, headlong into Alien, we've given you two different ends of the spectrum that you can recast and redo.
Well, and it's a soft reboot for Alien, too, because you're recasting it.
Correct.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, I really like what we've done here, fellas. This is some good shit.
Oh, this is some goddamn good shit.
Really, really good shit. All right, y'all. Wow. Everybody feel good about that one?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Some good-ass shows we've been putting on the last couple weeks, man.
Yo, people need to hear it.
Yeah, I think so, too. So, Tone, tell the people where they can find you.
You can find me, Fake William Cat, on Twitter. I'm not going to tell you where you can find me on Facebook because that's not a good idea. But you, inside joke, folks. So, we are all very accessible via the fan page. So yep. Get out the room, Facebook fan page. We respond. Hit us up. You know, we're constantly talking about something or the other. Like, hit us up. We're there.
Yep. Scott, where can people find you?
At Phenom Pyrus Twitter. I'm there very, 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 very rarely, but I'm there.
You gonna hit the forgot my password button this week. You gonna get on it. You gonna get on it.
Yeah. Well, I come to think of it, I really have. I have no idea what my password is for that stuff. Yeah, and at the Get Out the Room fan page, hit us up anywhere. Yeah, I mean we're there for you.
Yeah, man, fantastic. And you can get me at DAE021 at Get Out the Room. I usually run the Get Out the Room Twitter account. You catch us all, like Tone said, on the Facebook fan page. Connect with us. Tell us what you think of these ideas. I would love to be able for this to show up in the wrong person's hands and for us to get paid off of it. So steal away, Harper. You know, CTC, cut the check. You know what I mean? Secure the bag. We out here. Get Out the Room, Podomatic, Stitcher Radio, iTunes, everywhere good podcasts are found. Wicked Radio Network. Listen out, please. Catch it all. And we appreciate y'all, man. And for real, get at us. Let us know what you think. We out.
Peace.
Give us the check.
Cut it.